Welcome to the podcast, Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path, and I'm your host, Mike Allen. How well do you know the state you live in? How well do you know the town you live in, much less the neighboring town? Did you know there's an easy way to learn about any of the 169 different municipalities in Connecticut? All you gotta do is read those blue and white signs near your downtown that have a summary of the highlights of your town history. Well, our guest today, Tom Fatone, has not only heard of them, he's seen every one of them because he's traveled to all 169 municipalities in Connecticut, read the signs, photographed them, and then published them in a book called, appropriately enough, The Signs of Connecticut. He's going to be along in just a few moments to highlight quite a few of his interesting findings along that route. This week's trivia question: when did 30,000 people converge on a small Connecticut town, but it turns out it was all for naught, but many of them stayed anyway? Stick around after the main program for the answer, because then you'll know the topic for next week's show. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is brought to you by our sponsor, Yale New Haven Health. Yale New Haven Hospital was the very first hospital in Connecticut. They opened their doors 200 years ago and later introduced the entire country to the use of penicillin and chemotherapy. Today, some of the brightest minds in medicine choose to work there, and it's the primary teaching hospital for the prestigious Yale School of Medicine. For more information, log on to ynhhs.org. That's ynhhs.org. Well, people who've gotten to know me know that I have a saying about life: any day that I travel on a road I've never been on before is a good day. Few things give me as much fun and satisfaction as exploring new areas. I love it. Towns, cities, forests, rivers, oceans, mountains, and a good burger joint. Well, today we're going to focus on a person who has logged quite a few miles around the state of Connecticut. In fact, I only know two people who can say with a straight face that they've been to all 169 of Connecticut's municipalities. And today's guest, Tom Fatone, is one of those two. Not only has Tom visited all 169 towns and cities in Connecticut, he's photographed those blue and white history signs, you've seen them, and published a book with those photos and a little write-up about each municipality. It's called The Signs of Connecticut, and it's available at lulu.com. Tom, I have to say, I learned a lot about Connecticut in reading this book, and I really have to thank you for this. I mean, first of all, who's got the time to go to 169 municipalities around Connecticut and then take all the time to read the information on those signs? You have done such a great service for this. And what I did, I sat down with the book and had Google Maps on at the same time. And so I would look and see where the town was, because there's so many references to towns being created from other towns, and it all makes sense. So you've really done a great service in bringing all this together. And I just wanted to say that up front. But secondly, then, I've heard the story, but the listeners haven't, how you actually got started on this endeavor. If you could share that with us, that'd be great.
I grew up in Bridgeport. When we were young, we used to get on the parkway and head to New York. There used to be an old exit 50 on-ramp southbound, which is no longer there. There was always this sign that said Trumbull on it, blue sign with white lettering text. And I was always curious what the sign read. Drove by for many, many years, even when I got my license. And I just didn't able to have the time. And also the location of the sign, being in the middle of two roads on an island, it seemed kind of dangerous. Ironically, right across the street from a funeral home. So finally, I was with a friend and I asked her to pull over. I want to read what's on this sign. I'm curious. I see these signs, you know, here and there all over the state. So then I pulled over, crossed the street very carefully and read the Trumbull Blue Bicentennial sign. And it just explained the history of the town, talking about the Housatonic Railroad, and also mentioning that the sign was exactly where the first meeting house used to be, dating back in Trumbull's history when it broke off from the parent town of Stratford. So that pretty much got the ball rolling. Here and there, I would, you know, randomly see like the Milford sign, take a picture, or if I was up like in Litchfield. But what really eluded me was my hometown sign of Bridgeport. I couldn't seem to find it. I checked in with the town historian. I would ask the mayor's office. So one day I was at work and I was talking to a Connecticut Post reporter. At the time, I had accumulated, I think, 23 of the blue town signs. So he said he'd keep an eye out. He gave me a call the next day. He goes, oh, he goes, I think I found your sign. I was in a town meeting last night at the town hall, and your sign is in a closet. I was like, really? He goes, yes. So we arranged a day, and I took a picture of the sign in a closet. And when we were done, he goes, interesting. He goes, well, when you're all done accumulating all 169 of these signs for your municipalities and you write your book, give me a call. We'll do another story. I was like, write a book? He goes, yeah. He goes, once you're all done, this is pretty interesting. You're going to be traveling all over the state. And that's where the idea sprung about writing the book, The Signs of Connecticut.
It was 13 years that you spent going around the state capturing all 169 municipalities. Do I have that right?
That is correct. And I wasn't married and was single. I didn't have much money. I said, let's make Connecticut my playground.
You already alluded to the fact, and I notice this myself when I see these signs, that they're not always in the most convenient locations. And in fact, sometimes it's downright dangerous to get to them and read them.
Some are in odd spots, like the Woolkit and Waterbury signs were inside the town hall building, Stanford as well. As I went along these journeys, I would become more comfortable knowing that the signs would usually be on the town green, maybe near the First Congregational Church or somewhere in the vicinity of the town hall. There weren't too many that were dangerous and hard to get to, but I did know where to look after looking on maps ahead of time.
What I'm interested in was, did you just go to the center of town, find the sign, take some pictures and get in your car and leave? Or did you try and stop at a local diner, meet some of the people? And if you did, what were some of those people like? And did you tell them about your project?
I would plan ahead and I would always try to find something interesting, a place to eat, maybe something historic. I was up in Torrington and I went to the town green first looking for the sign. I was maybe halfway through my journey at that time, maybe up to 80, 90 towns or signs. And I asked a couple of old timers at the town green who were reading newspaper. And I asked them, I had pictures of the previous town signs. And I showed one of the guys, he's like, oh, you're the sign guy. You're the guy who's driving around the state. He goes, your sign is right up the street in front of the Warner Theater.
Now, we're going to get into some examples from specific towns. And I thank you in advance for spending some time pulling together 8 examples. I guess in alphabetical order, starting with Brooklyn. Go ahead.
When I found the Brooklyn sign on Historic and Scenic 169, it mentions that the Brooklyn Fair, which I was about ready to attend, is the oldest agricultural ongoing fair in the United States, dating back to 1852. I think the oldest fair in the country is situated right here in Connecticut. And again, when people think of Brooklyn, I'm sure they think of Brooklyn, New York.
Now, next is Canterbury.
Canterbury and also the main thoroughfare 169, I would say probably the most scenic road in Connecticut. And I was going that day to visit the Prudence Crandall House, a very interesting story about Prudence Crandall and how she tried to open the school for Black women back in 1833. But on the sign, I learned that day that a gentleman, Moses Cleveland, was the founder of Cleveland, Ohio. He returned to Canterbury and he died there and he's buried there.
Route 169 is just absolutely stunningly gorgeous. In fact, there are 2 national scenic highways in Connecticut. The first one is Route 169. The second one is the Merritt Parkway from the Greenwich border to Milford. Keeping going in alphabetical order here, East Hampton.
I happen to find the East Hampton sign. It talks about why it was nicknamed the Bell City. I learned about Bevan's Bells. I remember going up Route 66 that day, heading towards the center of the state. And over to my left, I saw a large amount of pumpkins, hundreds of them. And they all had face paintings on them. They were situated standing up, making human form. There was some kind of festival, carnival going on. What I had found was called Pumpkin Town, USA. And I guess it's just a place where people go in that part of the state to purchase their pumpkins. They have a festival that goes on around Halloween on the weekends, which can't be missed when you're driving on Route 66.
Interesting. Harwinton.
Interesting enough, on the sign, I found out that the founders of the town were both from Harford and Windsor, hence the Harwin part of the actual name of the town. But interesting enough, I found out the TV show, it was called Hell on Wheels. It was about the meeting of the Transcontinental Railroad. Well, the founder of the Central Pacific, which came from the West, meeting the Eastern one. His name was Collis Potter Huntington, and he was actually born in Harlington.
Lebanon?
I've always taken my birthday off, and I've managed to take a trip around Connecticut and go to a different town. I decided to take a trip to Lebanon, and I decided to mountain bike on the airline trail from East Hampton to the Lebanon Green. When I arrived there, what I found was a large pastoral green. I think it has the longest town green in the state of Connecticut. Interesting enough, though, on the sign, it talks about Jonathan Trumbull. Now, the Jonathan Trumbull House, as I found on the sign, was very interesting because there, during the Revolutionary War, a gentleman by the name of George Washington, Rochambeau, the general, and Lafayette from France, who at the time were here to help us, planned a meeting which would form the last battle, which would take place down in Virginia at Yorktown when we finally were able to defeat the British troops. That's all written there on the sign.
You're absolutely right. It's a great place to visit. Now, Lebanon is unusual, and so is another one that I wouldn't have known we had in Connecticut, Scotland.
Scotland is known for their festival. Mentioned on the sign, they talk about how the founders did actually come from Scotland, so it is named that accordingly. And to this day, they have one of the most popular Scottish festival in the state of Connecticut. Scotland, what I learned that day, is the birthplace of Samuel Huntington. And a lot of people don't know too much about Samuel Huntington. He was the signer of the Articles of Confederation and also the Declaration of Independence. Also, he was the president from 1779 to 1781 of the Continental Congress. So this was before we actually had a president. As you know, George Washington was our first president starting in 1789. But being president of the Continental Congress at the time pretty much made you the highest elected official in the land. So therefore, some may argue that Samuel Huntington could have been maybe one of our first presidents.
It is one of those great $5 beer questions at a bar that you can always fool people on. Did we have the first president of the U.S.? Sherman, Connecticut.
When I think of Sherman, what a beautiful town. It was in the fall, beautiful leaves. I found the town sign, and it talked about on the sign about a gentleman by the name of Roger Sherman, who the town is named after. And it talks about how he, in town earlier, he was a cobbler. He is the only statesman, elected statesman, to sign four important papers in our history, which were the Articles of Association, the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, and also the U.S. Constitution. I learned that all on the sign. I was like, wow.
It is a very welcoming town and gorgeous, absolutely stunningly gorgeous. Now, not necessarily saving the best for last, but you've done 168 out of the 169 municipalities. You're down to your last one. Go ahead.
I decided to save the state capital for last, and what was Hartford. I knew where the sign was. I thought it would be pretty cool if the governor, Jody Rell, would meet me. I tried for months. I worked side by side with the state police and the Connecticut Department of Transportation. I tried to use those avenues to contact the governor. It took me a really long time, months and months of letters and emails. So finally, a representative of Jody Rell at the time said, "We have 10 minutes for you on this day. Let's meet and you can take your picture of Hartford with Jody Rell." So on that day, I meet Jody Rell at the ancient burial grounds on Main Street, Route 44 in downtown Hartford there. And she came out of the car and she was very, very sweet, very nice to me. And we walked over and we took pictures with the sign. And we both learned that day that Hartford was named after a town called Hereford in England. And what was more interesting is that as a child going to schools in Bridgeport, I went to Thomas Hooker School in Bridgeport. And right in that vicinity, that's where Thomas Hooker is actually buried.
The last question that I have for you is, having done this, and you're one of the very few people that I know who's been to all 169 municipalities in Connecticut. I know just one other person who can make this claim. Would you do it over again?
Funny you mention that. When my son was born, we have once a month since he's born, and he's approaching age 8 now, we have gone to a different town. We've taken pictures next to the town sign, and we've done something interesting with him. Maybe taking him to a carnival, a fair, someplace cool to eat, checking out a cool hiking trail path. So we're going to continue this, and we're going to be all done again, I guess, when he's 13 years old.
I'll tell you, anybody who doesn't really venture out and see the rest of Connecticut and all that it has to offer is simply missing a lot, and I'm sure you would agree with that.
100%. Each town has something to offer, whether it's a historic monument, an agricultural affair, a museum, someplace great to eat, you name it. Each town's got it, all 169 of our municipalities.
That wraps up this episode of Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path. I suppose today's episode was truly about being off Connecticut's beaten path. Well, I want to thank our guest for today's program, Tom Fatone, author of the book The Signs of Connecticut. It's a great book available at lulu.com, where you can learn all sorts of fascinating facts and tidbits about Connecticut's 169 towns and cities. The answer to this week's trivia question, when did 30,000 people converge on a small Connecticut town, but it turns out it was all for naught, however many of them stayed anyway? Well, the answer is the summer of 1970, when the Woodstock Concert of Connecticut at Powder Ridge Ski Area in Middlefield was supposed to happen, but didn't. Still, it turned into quite the week-long endeavor for thousands of young persons who frankly didn't want to take no for an answer. Wait until you hear this story. If you like Amazing Tales, don't forget to tell your friends about it and where they can find it. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is a production of True North Associates, LLC. This is Mike Allen. Be safe and please stay healthy.